today I'm talking with Ted Shai, a children's poet, also known as That Poetry Guy. So for those of you that don't know Ted, he is the author of 4 collections of funny poetry for kids. He goes by the moniker of That Poetry Guy. And in fact, you'll find him online at poetryguy.com. Now, Ted's got a brand new collection of funny poetry for kids out. It just came out a few days ago. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today, as well as his life and his poetry. So, Ted, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Ken. It's great to be here. Thanks.
Good, good. It's good to have you. Now, you know, I did not realize, and I should have known this, I didn't realize you had 4 collections of poetry out. I absolutely loved your first one, I Froze My Mother, and your new one is called Now I Know My ZBCs, but I have not seen I Tickled My Teachers and I Threw My Brother Out. And I want to talk to you a little bit about your books. I also want to mention, though, that your poems appear in a lot of anthologies, both here and in the UK as well. But yes. can you tell my listeners a little bit about your books and what's in them and why they should read them and what they're going to get out of it?
Sure. I've been writing funny poems for about 12 years or so, I'm fairly new to it, and relatively speaking, and I write from my own experience, as most people do, in my own kid voice, not in my 58-year-old poet voice, but in my 8-year-old voice. And I really try to capture not just my own voice, although it's pretty much me talking. It's very often kids who are not necessarily the stars in their world, but they're kids that are dealing with, you know, the usual issues that kids deal with in family situations and in school situations. And in most cases, I try to write about kids who are questioning life. They're looking at life a little bit differently and are questioning authority sometimes, questioning why their parents do certain things.
Right.
Or their teachers. And I think the 4 different collections focus on 4 different pieces of kids' lives. I think the first one, I Froze My Mother, is definitely focused on family. That was my first collection, and it really does make its focus family life and the odd things that happen in a kid's family.
Right.
The second one, I Tickle My Teachers, naturally talks about school issues and school challenges that kids face and funny things that happen to them in the school day.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up very much a sports fanatic in the East Coast of the U.S., mostly around New York City, where my family lived.
Right.
So I was not just a big sports fan, although I didn't really spend a lot of time promoting my teams. I was mostly a participant, and I just love sports. So, and I still do. I still am very active and riding my bike and that kind of stuff. So the third one, I Threw My Brother Out, is definitely has a very thematic focus on sports and kids' relationships to sports and their coaches and that kind of thing. And then the last book, which just came out, was really fun because I would pretty much say that my natural poetic voice is around an 8 or 9 year old. That's sort of how it comes out of me.
Right. And how does Now I Know My ZBCs differ from I Tickled My Teachers then, since they're both books of poems about school primarily?
Yeah, right? They are. And I just made an effort because I really felt as though I was not neglecting, but I didn't have enough poems that were really aimed at a younger audience.
Okay.
So this particular one, I really went out of my way to try to write poems that were addressing issues that first and second and third graders, but mostly K-1, 2, the primary grades, deal with. Mm-hmm. And it was an interesting challenge because I really did have to struggle to get to that voice. I watched my vocabulary, although I have to say that I'm not sure I completely succeeded because I think this is more of a collection of read-alouds than it is poems that kids, at least the first and second graders, could pick up and comfortably read.
Right.
But definitely the humor and the sensibility is definitely aimed at a younger audience. The humor is a little less ironic and more concrete and right at you.
Right. Now, before you were a poet, you were a teacher, is that right?
I spent, I've done a lot of things in my life, but I finally, about 1990, that's 21 years ago, listened to a little voice that had always been in my head and calling me to be a teacher. And I went back, I left the business world, where I'd been in the advertising business and a bunch of things. And so I went back, got my master's and became a teacher. And my wife and I and family moved to Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
1992, and I took a job for about 6 years. I was a teacher, elementary teacher in Shelburne, Vermont.
Right.
And I taught everything in that 6 years. They do a lot of multi-age teaching up here, so I was pretty well pushed. I did every grade from kindergarten to fifth grade over those 6 years.
That was some combinations of the two. That was going to be my next question. Was
pretty good taste.
I wanted to know what grade you were teaching. I guess all of them. So, how did you make the transition from if you started writing about 12 years ago and you taught for 6 years from 92 to 98, I see a little gap there, but it seems that you made a transition from teacher to poet. How did that come about for you?
Well, I found out I really had not discovered a lot of the basic children's poetry canon, except by being a teacher. I have kids of my own, and they were growing up about the same time. So I was, for the first time, introduced to Shel Silverstein and Jack Paletsky and Roald Dahl, both his prose and his poetry. And I really started to dive into it, both sharing it with my kids and learning about it myself. And then I had the great good fortune to watch a friend who happened to be a very accomplished children's author, a non-fiction author by the name of Pete Lowry, do a school program. I watched him in a class in Albany, and he was staggeringly effective and just transfixed the audience. And something clicked in me, and I said, that's it. That's what I need to do. So I took a year off and wrote furiously, thinking that I would get all this, the writing out of my system, and that would be it. And I'd go back to my classroom, and they'd be glad to see me, hopefully. And I just had so much fun and had so little written. I wrote a lot, but I had so much left to write that I sweet-talked my wife into letting me keep at this process and just kept writing and writing and finally started to share them more in schools and carved out a little niche in the school program world. So I was visiting schools, and I was able to pretty much transition from teaching to a more focused kind of teaching, where I go to a school and both present my work, but also do writing workshops with the kids. So I've decided I'm a much more effective teacher when I'm focused on one area, which is poetry and playing with words, which is my favorite thing to do. So it worked out just great.
So when you say that he had transfixed his audience and you decided that that was what you needed to do, you were actually saying that what you needed to do was write, not necessarily be a presenter or a performer?
Both. I listened to his writing. He's a prose writer, but it was mostly his presentation that convinced me that maybe I could write and then share my writing in a school setting like that, so I could combine performance and writing and teaching all in one package. And watching Pete do his thing was just, really powerful.
That's terrific. Now something for the listeners who have not read your poems, I just want to mention one thing that really strikes me when I read your poetry, Ted. I write funny poetry, you write funny poetry, but the thing that really strikes me about your poetry is that your poems are always positive and they're upbeat. They're never mean-spirited. And I always come away not just smiling, but feeling better too. I feel better about the world for having read your poetry, and I really want to know what your secret is, because I want to use it.
Well, that's very kind. I don't deliberately go that route, but I guess it does come out that way. I think I sort of have a life philosophy that really does look at the best things that people have. And when I go to work with kids, I very often will ask them and really probe to see if they can identify their gifts, their special things they like to do and do well.
Right.
And I really try to make an effort in everything I do to reinforce that in others and in myself. So I guess that sort of positive outlook
right
comes through in most of what I do. And I do have kids that are, not always positive, that are in some cases looking to game the system a little bit. I just finished a poem where the kid is trying to get out of doing his chores, and he's bragging about the fact that he has figured out a way to do that. And, and the way he does it, the payoff at the end, the very end of the poem, is basically you find out that he's avoiding his chores and avoiding his homework by saving up his allowance and paying his mother to do it. So, I wouldn't say that's necessarily the most positive role model that I'm presenting in that poem, but it's an unlikely scenario, and it certainly is a funny, you know, way to solve the problem of the poem.
Right. Well, speaking of which, I wonder if you have a poem that you would like to share with us. I have more questions for you about your poetry, but I want to give you a chance to share some of your poems with the listeners so they have some sense of what we're talking about and so that they will run out and buy your books.
Okay, well, I'll share a couple. That's very nice. This is one that I told some kids this morning, actually, when I was with them. I wrote it, as I often do, in response to something I've heard. I keep a little book in my pocket, and I write things down, as you probably do, as quickly as I can to make sure I don't forget them.
Mm-hmm.
And I happened to be listening to the radio on a trip to Virginia to a school, and there was a conversation on the radio about our quite remarkable country and the freedoms we enjoy here. And so this little poem popped into my head, and it was, you know, clearly playing with words, but it also stressed some positives as well. So here's the poem that's called "I'm Not Free." In school today, I realized I'm very proud to be living in a country where everyone is free. I told my little sister this. She scowled and slammed the door. As I heard her say as she walked away, "I'm not free. I'm four."
Oh God! You know, I read that in Now I Know My ZBCs, but it still gets me. What a terrific little play on words.
Yeah. And here's a real short one. I just
okay.
finished.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
That's it speaks to the fact that one of the great things about poems that I love, and it makes them so attractive to kids, is that they're short. And the format is a little different and, or, you know, a little looser.
Mm-hmm.
And so that especially the Tangled writers can really latch onto them. And the success I see in kids that are sometimes the ones that are struggling with their writing, that the attractiveness of poetry, the looseness and the fact that sometimes you don't need capital letters even or punctuation is pretty cool. So here's a little poem. It's not published, but it just came off my pencil a couple days ago. It's called "Short is Good."
All right.
A poem bounces like a ball and sometimes likes to rhyme. But best of all, a poem is short for when I'm short of time.
Nice. Very nice. I'll look forward to seeing that in one of your books. You know, something else I noticed about your poetry, Ted, is that your poems, you know, although you're writing funny poetry, right, as many children's authors do, if you're looking at Shel Silverstein or Jack Prelutsky or others, I notice that your poems tend to be less about, say, crazy wordplay or imaginative flights of fancy, like, say, the poems of Jack Prelutsky or narrative stories about crazy characters like a lot of Shel Silverstein's poems. In other words, your poems tend to be more about things that a kid might actually think or do. You write as if you were a kid. Now, I'm just curious, is this because as an adult, you feel now that you can actually say the things that you felt or wished you could say when you were a kid?
Well, that's really interesting you asked that question. I think it is. You know, I definitely tell kids I'm 58 years old on the outside, but I'm 8 on the inside, and I really do feel as though I'm kind of delayed in my development in so many ways. And my poetry, the writing of it, really does open up the opportunity for me to ask questions that I didn't ask as a kid and face issues that I didn't have the courage to face. I wrote a poem once about a kid who challenges his dad quietly, who, you know, parents oftentimes will ask you to do things, and they don't always do it themselves. In this particular poem, the child has been asked by his father not to talk with his mouth full, and of course the dad is asking him to do that with his mouth full.
Marvelous.
And the kid, of course, you know, kindly or quietly makes that point. But yes, I think it avails me the opportunity in my writing to speak to a lot of issues that that have been lying dormant for a while, maybe.
Well,
I also see them in myself and in other kids, and I just, and in fact, as you probably find, it absolutely, I could not do what I do. I could not write without having fairly regular kid interaction. Going to schools and working with kids, I find whether it's a direct correlation or a direct idea that I pick up from them, it's more just this osmosis of energy that I find. I walk away from a school completely energized and feeling much younger, and it absolutely informs my poetry completely.
That's so true. It's absolutely true. I love spending time with the kids because you really do get ideas from them, even if it's not direct. You know, their energy and their joie de vivre really comes through.
Absolutely.
Now I wanted to just mention a couple of things. One thing that's different about your books from any other poetry collections that I have seen is your use of photographs. Now, I know you don't take these pictures yourself, I don't think, but I'm sure you're involved. I'd like you to maybe just tell the listeners a little bit about see if you can give them a visual image of what your books look like and why and how that comes about. How do you create these wonderful, wonderful photographs of the kids?
Well, it's a really interesting process. Thanks for asking. I must have, as a kid, I think, you know, way back in the early days of my life, I must have seen, and I do remember seeing some calendars or books that had some black and white photographs of mostly baby faces making funny faces and having kind of a payoff on the opposite page, either a poem or usually just a little funny line. And that must have stayed with me because about 12 years ago, or less, I guess, 10 years ago, when I first started putting the poems together for the first book, I Froze My Mother. Mm-hmm. It came to me that you know, how do you illustrate? Well, you could definitely do it like Shell or Jack does with someone else or your own illustrations. And I like to dabble with illustration, but I'm not that accomplished and don't have the time. And you know, where these ideas come from, that was just popped into my head. So I just could picture exactly in my eye having a poem on one page and a big, almost life-size close-up black and white photograph of a child on the opposite page that was really paying off the poem, usually whatever the emotion is that's generated in the very last line or two of the poem is what I wanted to accomplish and see on the face of the child on the opposite page. Mm-hmm. And again, by this remarkable kind of coincidence and friendship, the same guy I just mentioned, Pete Lowry, who's a nonfiction writer, happens to also be a very accomplished photographer. And I approached him and said, here's what I'm thinking. And he said, great. And he has a lot of great cameras and great skill. So every time we do a book, we gather together about a dozen or more, maybe a dozen and a half. And sometimes in the last book, we actually had 29 kids.
I want to know how you get a dozen and a half kids. I see. You said that'd be 18 kids. I'm sorry. I was thinking 12 and a half kids. I couldn't figure that one out.
I get the whole kids. And I get them. I usually get them at a school that I've either visited or is local to me in Vermont here. And there, as you might expect, are a lot of volunteers. And I usually often will get a teacher or a librarian at that school to help to identify certain kids that might really benefit by having the enjoyment of being involved in a project like this. Or
sure.
In some cases, I really am looking because Vermont tends to be a little more homogeneous racially. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for a better mix of a cross-section of cultures in my books. And I really think that's important, obviously, for sharing with kids around the globe. So I round them up and have a dozen kids or so. And Pete and I have a pretty good technique now where we either put them in a circle, a big circle, depending on their age. And I started out by reading the poem to them, and it took a little while for me to get the poem out. So I basically, nowadays, have reached the point where I'll basically share with them what emotion I'm looking for in their face and model it myself and have a couple kids model it. And then we'll just go around the circle, and Pete will have a super high-speed digital camera, and he'll take, well, in the case of my last book, he took 5,000 photographs in 2 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
Wow.
And then I had to go through them all.
That's got to be hard.
Match up the best possible photograph to pay off the poem that was on the opposite page. So it's a really interesting process that that I enjoy a lot. I'm kind of graphically or visually oriented, and so I like being a part of choosing that. And then an art director gets involved, and I, you know, pretty much identify the poems I like, but give the art director a certain amount of leeway. And then and a poem, you know, the book is then composed and designed, and it's quite delightful, I think.
They make very, very good looking books. I'm curious if now I know these books are available on, you know, Amazon and Barnes & Noble and wherever else you buy books, but I'm curious if they are available or if they're going to be available for, say, your e-reader, like the Kindle or the Nook.
Yes. In fact, boy, with the way things are changing in the publishing industry, it absolutely makes sense to do that. And my art director designer is in the middle, as we are talking today, is working on reformatting. And I think it's a little different with these photographs to format them. I think each e-reader is a little bit different in its specs. So he's trying to make that transition and reformat them so that within the next month or so, I hope to have all four of these books at least available by e-reader. And the other cool thing, which will be a lovely bonus as a result, for the books themselves, the hardcovers, the actual book, we had to do them in black and white, which is quite a lovely image, nice contrast. But for the e-readers, because of its digital format, we're going to be able to go full color. And I have to say, when you see these images in full color of these kids' faces, it's staggeringly beautiful. So
yeah,
fun.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, I'm going to wrap this up, but I want to give you a chance to share maybe another poem if you like. But I also want to mention to the listeners, just in case, I want to mention the spelling of your name. In fact, maybe you want to explain the spelling of your name.
Yeah, it's a German name. I don't have any affiliation or connection with Germany, but my great-great-great-great-grandfather, I guess it was, came from Germany to Buffalo, New York, and it was one of those names that might have been changed, but I think it was basically how it came across on the boat. And it's a German name, so it's pronounced in Germany, they would say Scheu, but it naturally got changed to Shy. Mm-hmm. And I was at a school about 10 years ago and, you know, struggled with this always. In fact, I'm often, not often, but occasionally introduced to a full assembly of kids by a principal who says, "We are so excited to have children's poet Ted Hsu here today," which leads me, it's perfect because it leads me right to laughing about how my name is mispronounced. And I ask kids how many have names that are always unpronounced, you know, mispronounced by people, and about half the hands at least in the auditorium come up. But I had a first grader turn to me about 10 years ago who was a fan of Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Oh, right, right.
She said to me, "I know what we'll do. We'll call you Ted Shy, that poetry guy." So it made a nice little sweet rhyme and a little brand, I guess, if you want to call it that, and it seemed to stick. So I've kept with that, and it's easier to see that it rhymes with guy.
And that's why your website is poetryguy.com. And of course, if anybody wants to find out more about you and your books and your school visits, and you have other resources for kids and teachers, and you have poems all up there at poetryguy.com.
I do, Ken. I wanted to say one quick thing while I've got
sure.
you is, or while you've got me. I'm just in the process of redoing that website, and I've challenged myself to, this is a big challenge, but I think I can do it. I'm every single day of the school year, so 180 days of every school year for the next 5 years, I'm going to upload and have a new poem of the day video at that website. So there'll be a video blog of me reading a poem, a new poem, every single day of the school year. And that's just me, but I have 7 cousins. Me obviously dressed in different costumes, but I will have 8 different readers, including myself, that will be reading out loud a new poem of the day every single day. So
now that is ambitious.
I think that would help me. It would challenge me to write a lot more. I would at least, I try to get a poem done every day, but it would at least force me to write a poem every day. So that's my goal.
My hat's off to you. So do you have one more poem you'd like to share with the listeners before we go?
Sure, I'll share this one. It's in the book that it's called I Tickled My Teachers, actually.
Okay.
And I ask kids how many drafts they think I do of a poem, and they guess all over the map, of course. And I would say I most often rewrite a poem about 10 times or so before it's pretty much to my liking. And this is the only poem that I can think of, and it was quite miraculous. that came into my head and was finished right away. Cool. In one draft.
Oh, I can't wait.
And so here it is, and it's a fairly long poem, but it was, you know, channeled from the clouds, I guess, that day. I was walking in the rain, listening to the raindrops go bonk on my head, and this poem came into my head, and I absolutely stopped and wrote it down instantly, because here it is. It's called My New Invention. I have a new invention that I have just designed. I'd love to share it with you now, if you don't mind. It keeps the raindrops off the heads of every gal and fella. I bet you'd like to get one soon. I call it my umbrella.
I could kind of see that one coming about halfway through there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but very nice. Very nice. I like it. Oh, well, listen, Ted, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to talk with me about your poetry and share it with the listeners. And any last things you want to leave us with?
Well, no, Ted, I just want to say thank you, Ken, for including me. It's been a great pleasure to be here. And as I say to kids, if any are listening to this, and I hope a lot will, you know, keep writing and write stuff down. Keep a little book to keep ideas in. And I love to think that maybe when I'm 100 years old, that I'll be sitting in a chair reading a book of poems written by one of your listeners. And that would be totally cool.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
I'm planning to stick around until then.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I have the same plan. Actually, I plan to live to be 150. So, you know, one thing I do want to mention before you go is I think every teacher should read your book. I specifically think that teachers should read your book, Now I Know My ZBCs, and they should read your poem, Who Needs Recess? And then they should photocopy it, and they should hang it up in the teacher lounge. So I'm not going to let you share that one. I'm going to challenge teachers to go out and get a copy of Now I Know My ZBCs so they can read the poem Who Needs Recess, because I think it's one that every teacher and every school administrator should read.
That's great, Ken. Well, thanks a lot. It's a great pleasure chatting with you, and good luck to you with all your writing as well.
Thanks, Ted. Have a great day.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye. This has been Ken Nesbitt with PoetryForKids.com interviewing Ted Shy, that poetry guy, from PoetryGuy.com. Music by Kevin MacLeod.